It's rare that Bill's here while I'm speaking. I feel like the professor is sitting in the back of the class taking notes. Makes me a little bit nervous. Actually, God's watching, so that's much more important there. Something happened to me this past few weeks. It was Veterans Day a while back, and I got this really cool little coin. Can't see it, you don't have your glasses. It's just this really neat coin of an American flag. On the back is all the little logos or emblems of all the different militaries. It's really neat. It's a veteran. Our human resources manager gave it to us. I thought it was pretty cool. And it's interesting because I can connect to this because I was in the military. Some of you were as well. And this is kind of like a symbol of the values, the culture, the traditions of what it was to be in the military. The Bible talks quite a bit about symbols, different types of representations of values and tradition and culture. I want to start by turning over to Revelation 16 because there was something here, and I think it's relevant for this time of year. We just came through Thanksgiving and Black Friday, and starts at 8 o'clock at night on Thanksgiving. I want to go to Revelation chapter 16, and I want to read a scripture here that I think that we have to take very seriously. Revelation 16, verse 1. Here God tells us through his word, through John, through this vision that John saw. It says, I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth. So this is talking about the end times when God is going to basically bring the earth to its knees. He says, and the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men. Now that doesn't sound very good. A grievous sore upon the men, which had the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast. And upon them which worshipped his image. It's mark of the beast. That's interesting. It's kind of like that symbol that I was showing about the military. Some sort of mark. Look over here in Revelation chapter 14. Let's go back a chapter, a couple chapters. Revelation chapter 14. We'll start in verse 9. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image and receive his mark on his forehead or in his hand. And I want you to remember that. Where is this mark? It's on your forehead and in your hand. The same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God. So if you have this mark, brethren, then you are going to participate in this wrath that God is going to bring on the earth. It says, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. So it's anger. God is angry with those who have this mark. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels, in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends up forever and ever, and they have no rest day nor night, no who worship the beast and his image, and whosoever receives the mark of his name. So this is pretty serious stuff, if you have the mark. You know, brethren, I think in terms of like the mafia, some of these movies where the Godfather puts an order out to put a hit on somebody. And that person's a marked man from that period forward. They have a mark. Well, every one of you is a marked man or woman. I don't know if you know that. I am as well. We all have a mark over us. The question is, what is the mark that is on you? So there are a lot of different views, a lot of different beliefs around this mark of the beast. It's actually a pretty interesting topic. I looked on the internet and I found a whole bunch of different articles. And just a couple examples. I saw an article right off the bat. I typed it in Google, Mark of the Beast. The first thing that came up was Obamacare. They're going to plant RFID microchips in your brain. So this article said that the first thing, you know, Obamacare, he wants to go and you're going to go to the doctor and they're going to inject a little microchip into your brain with all your medical records. And every time you go by somewhere, they can scan you and they know your whole medical history. There's these little credit cards. The innovation in credit cards, if you were to peel a credit card into apart, you'll see a literal tiny microchip in there that's sending off a signal. They have this credit card prototype that's got little microphones in there that could actually record your voice and transmit what you say. Some people think that that credit card is the mark of the beast. Read articles about a national ID card. Some people think that Nero, one of the ancient Roman emperors, was basically the beast, or that the mark of this number 666 associated with it, because the 666, his name adds up. If you do the Roman numbers, the numerology, it adds up to 666. Some people think it's going to be some sort of tattoo on your forehead. I can picture all of you with a big tattoo on your forehead. I don't know what it's going to look like. There's a lot of confusion about the mark of the beast, and it's pretty mysterious. But with this mark, I mean, God put it in here for a reason. With this mark having such grave consequences, that if you have this mark of the beast, you are going to face into the very wrath of God. I think since this is so mysterious and has such grave consequences, wouldn't you want to understand really what this is? What is this mark of the beast? Well, I'll just give you my opinion. No, I won't. We'll go with the Bible. Before I start getting into that, so that's what I want to talk about today. What is the mark of the beast? And before we get into that, I think it's relevant, or maybe a good starting point, to say, well, what is the beast? Now, I read over these words, again, I've mentioned before, a lot of times I catch myself just reading over words, and then I go back and I'll hear a sermon or something, and just one word will make me think, wow, I never thought about it quite that way. Well, think of the word beast. It's interesting that God uses the word beast to describe this thing. What is a beast? I think of Beauty and the Beast. Here's the beauty. We just watched it with my little girl, Allie. You know, pretty little dainty girl, and the beast is this huge, ferocious being, scary looking, strong, powerful, untamed. Think of what a beast is. Words have meaning. God is the author of all language. He uses that word for a reason, because it's to teach us something about what this beast is. This is massive, strong, powerful. It'll consume you. When I think of beast, I think of a lion, or a huge alligator or crocodile, a shark. I see this great white shark, you know, the Shark Week. I don't know if you're like me. I turn on Shark Week and then I can't turn it off for a week. But you see down in South Africa, they have this rubber seal that they're dragging behind a boat, and this huge shark just, boom, jumps out of the water, and this must go 15, 20 feet in the air. It's teeth. That's a beast. God says that there is a beast out in the world today. What is this beast? Let's turn over to Revelation chapter 13. I'm going to take a couple minutes here and go through a few scriptures. Just kind of read through them, and because the Bible has a lot to say about this beast that it talks about. Revelation chapter 13, we'll just start in verse 1. It says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea," and this is John again describing the vision of what he sees at the end times. It says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea." And this is an incredible creature, as you see when he describes it. This beast, says, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And I think of I don't know if those of you that have been around for a while saw the World Tomorrow television show. There was a great depiction of this beast coming out of the ocean. Really good drawing with the 7 heads. Looked like 7 heads of a dragon. It says, "And the beast which I saw," it said, here we go, "and 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy." So we see that it's this beast having 7 heads, and it's associated with blasphemy. So it's not godly. "And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard," so keep that in mind, And his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. So all three of these are pretty ferocious beasts by themselves. It says, and the dragon gave him his power. Now, if you go back in Revelation, I think it's chapter 13, back in chapter 12 here, verse 9. Let's jump, look back here, chapter 12, verse 9. And the great dragon, so here's another reference to this dragon, was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. So what is this dragon? It's Satan the devil. So go back here to verse 13. So we see that Satan the devil gives this beast its power. We'll drop to verse 4. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast. So people were worshipping this beast and Satan through it, probably unknowingly, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? So it's a very powerful being. And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. Again, reference to the blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name. So I think God's trying to get the point across that this beast produces blasphemies against him. Not just against his name, but against his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints. So this beast is going to be something that's contrary or in competition or against the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. So this is a ruling authority. There's power over nations given to this beast. Now look over here in verse 11. And I beheld another beast coming out of the earth. So this is the second one. And this one had two horns like a lamb. Now what does a lamb usually represent in the Bible? Christ. So this has two horns like a lamb. I think in terms of horns, if they were capitals, I think of an organization that has two capitals. We'll come back to that. So this beast had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon, so cunning, deceitful, spoke blasphemies, as we just saw. And he exercises all the power of the first beast before him, so again, power over nations, very powerful being, and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And it talks about the fact that this beast performs miracles, does great wonders. Verse 15, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So there's a persecution that this beast causes. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive, again, here's this mark, a mark in their right hand and a mark in their foreheads. And that no man might buy or sell. So if you don't have this mark in your right hand or your forehead, you're going to be shunned in some way. It'd be difficult for you to participate in society. It says, save he that has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And it says, here is wisdom. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is a number of a man. And his number is 666. So right here, the Bible doesn't say it's a credit card. Doesn't say it's a microchip. It says the number of a beast is a number of a man. So what did we read here? First, this beast is this crazy-looking being made up of a leopard, a bear, a lion. It has 7 heads and 10 horns. It's given power by Satan the devil. People worshipped it. And it spoke great blasphemies against God. So what is this thing? Well, the Bible actually tells us, gives us a pretty good description of it. Go back in Daniel chapter 7, because we don't have to speculate. Again, if you look up the beast in Google, you get a whole bunch of different views. A lot of opinions, a lot of people try to overlay all their different ideas and their imagination about what this beast is, but if they would only just read the Bible and forget about their views, the Bible will tell you exactly what this beast is. Go over to Daniel chapter 7 here, because here, this is a prophecy written thousands of years ago, and here Daniel basically interpreted dreams. God gave him interpretations of different dreams, some of them from Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. But in Daniel chapter 7, there's a dream here that talks about this beast. And then Daniel goes and God gives him the interpretation. We'll go ahead and read that. So start off in Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream. So God gave Daniel a dream. And visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and said, so here's the dream. I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great seas. And four great beasts came out from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Verse 5, and beheld another beast, a second like to a bear. Verse 6, the third, beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. Verse 7, and after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth, and it devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue of the feet of it. It was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So you see, the four beasts, you see the 10 horns. Clearly this is talking about the same beast. If you think about it, it's pretty incredible that these two men, living so far apart, had such a similar vision. So what's the interpretation? Verse 16. So here Daniel says, I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me that, and made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four, very simply, so here's a metaphor. The beasts represent something. It says these beasts, which are four, are four kings. Four kings. Makes sense, since this beast was going to be over nations. So these different beasts are kings, and the kings represent nations. It says these are four kings which shall arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom. So this is a very high level, kind of 10,000 foot sketch. The beasts are four kings, and then it says the saints eventually are going to take over and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I would know the truth of the four beasts, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron. So now he's honing in on this fourth beast, and his nails of brass, which were devoured, break in pieces, and stamped in the residue of his feet. And of the 10 horns that were in his head. So there's this fourth beast with the 10 horns, and of the others which came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes, and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints, and prevailed against them. So one of these horns, again, is going to persecute the saints. Until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. And the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, this fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth. So the first 3 were the 3 kingdoms. This is the fourth kingdom. It's going to be different from all other kingdoms. And it's going to devour the whole earth. So it's going to be a world ruling kingdom. And shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And the 10 horns, this mysterious 10 horns... So the 10 horns on those 7 heads of the beast in Revelation, same thing. These 10 horns are 10 kings that shall arise. And then another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and shall subdue 3 kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, again, blasphemies, and shall wear out the saints. So there's persecution. He's going to persecute the saints. He's going to think to change times and laws. They shall be given into his hand until the time and times and the dividing of times. Verse 27, and the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints. So again, high-level sketch. Then it says that after this, the saints are going to end up eventually overcoming this beast and taking the kingdom. So the Bible tells us that this beast is representative of kingdoms throughout the earth. Now, I'm not going to go through it, but if you go and read Daniel chapter 2, you can read about that other image with the head of gold and the chest of silver, the belly of brass, the legs of iron, and you'll realize, again, that that's these four kingdoms. I'm going to take you through some history here. So this first kingdom is Babylon. In Daniel chapter 2, Daniel even says that that first kingdom is Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon. Babylon started in about 1790 B.C. I'll tell you how long ago this was. Almost 2,000 years before Christ. That was the height of the Babylonian Empire under Hammurabi. He was the first king of Babylon. Around 1300 B.C., there is this man or this being called Marduk or Mithra, which was viewed as a god, a Babylonian god, the god of the sun. About 600 B.C., which we were reading here in Daniel, was a Babylonian Empire. This is when Nebuchadnezzar was alive. So you see, Babylon spanned over 1,000 years. It was the first real kingdom on this earth. You can get into a lot of detail about the mystery religion, all the different religion associated with Nimrod and associated with the Babylonian mystery religion. We'll get into that in a little bit, but basically that's the first kingdom, Babylon. After that, in 539 B.C., Persia conquered Babylon. Persia became the next world-ruling government. So that's this other beast. If you look at the image of Daniel, that's the silver. After that, the Greek Empire, 330 B.C., Alexander the Great captured Babylon. And in 146 B.C. came the Roman Empire. And Rome has really been the world empire since. There's been multiple re-emergences of the Roman Empire from 130 or so B.C. all the way through until this modern day. The Holy Roman Empire, the Vatican, is still its own state in Rome. So we see that this beast is a political system. It's a religious system. The Bible clearly tells us it's this system of governments connecting back to Babylon with a mystery religion behind it, the Satan's religion, basically. What is this mark of the beast? Let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 6, because before we get into the mark of the beast, I want to talk about a different mark. Hopefully the mark that all of you have. I think the fact that you're all sitting here would be evidence that you do have this mark. But turn with me back to Deuteronomy chapter 6, because God has a mark as well. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6. Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commands to teach you. So this was God talking to the ancient Israelites after he brought them out of Egypt, talking about the commandments. It says, these are the commandments your God commands to teach you, that you might do them in the land whither you go to possess it. Verse 6, and these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. So God's commands are to be inside of you, in your heart. It says, and you shall teach them diligently unto your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house. Now I know in today's day and age, with everything so busy, it's hard to talk about the commandments every day. But that's what God wants. He wants these commandments to be so much a part of us that we think about them all the time. And when you walk by the way, when you're walking to your car, you're thinking about the commandments, God's ways. When you lie down, when you rise up, God wants you to be completely showered and immersed in his laws and his commandments. He says, and you shall bind them for a sign, and here it is, upon your head, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. I'm sorry, a sign upon your hand. So here we see God's mark is on your hand and on your forehead. Very similar, isn't it? Is it a coincidence? There, God is saying his mark isn't going to be a tattoo on your head. It's not going to be some mark or some microchip in your hand. It's basically his commands in your brains. They're part of you. Now, what does it mean on your hand? Well, your hand is what you do to go work. If I want to go do, I just remodeled half of my basement. I had to pick up a hammer to do work. Otherwise, nothing got done, and it was in my hand. Your hand is, to me, signifies that it's doing. So it's not only having God's commands in your mind, but it's living them, doing, putting them to work. So if you're doing those two things, if God's commands are in your mind and in your heart, and you're putting them to practice in your life, then you have God's mark. Look over here in Exodus chapter 31, because this is a little bit more detail about what is God's mark. And I'll tell you, I don't know if anything can be clearer than this. Exodus chapter 31. We'll start in verse 12. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak you also unto the children of Israel, saying, truly. Now remember, the fourth commandment is the commandment to keep the Sabbath. So it's one of the commands. So God's really honing in on this. He says, truly, my Sabbaths you shall keep. He doesn't say, truly, I think you should probably consider keeping my Sabbath if it's not too much trouble. This is a command. Truly, my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign. You want to know who God's people are? The Sabbath, it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord that does sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death. God's pretty serious about this. It says, for whosoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever does any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout your generations, for a perpetual covenant. And perpetual means that it never ends. It's like a clock that's got batteries that'll just run forever, never stops, perpetual. Not till Matthew. It's a perpetual covenant. Verse 17, it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. God also talks about the Sabbaths, plural, all of the holy days. So here God tells us very plainly that the mere fact that you're here on Saturday, the Sabbath day, when everybody else is out Christmas shopping, the rest of the world who says they're Christian is going to be going to church tomorrow or Wednesday night. Well, they pick Wednesday night too. That's kind of strange. I grew up in a church where we went on Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. Guess you got to make sure that you get back in there and give a tithe before the end of the week. Well, maybe that was a low blow. But you're here on the Sabbath. And you just read that the Sabbath is the sign. That's the mark of God. That's his mark. Good for you. Thank God that he taught you about what his mark is. But the rest of the world doesn't know this. They have this different mark. But some would say, but Dave, didn't Jesus do away with the Sabbath? Didn't he do away with all those commandments? Well, I read in Genesis chapter 2, verse 1, that on the seventh day, God rested. That he created the Sabbath. The days weren't created before God came on the scene. God made it the way it was. God chose 7 days. He worked six. Then he had an extra day. He could have very easily said, okay, I'm done working. Let's start the next day. He said, no, there's going to be a rest, a seventh day. In John chapter 1, verse 1, the Bible tells us, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God, and all things were made by Him. Speaking of Jesus Christ, here is proof that Jesus Christ is the one who actually did the creating. Jesus Himself made the Sabbath. Why would He do away with it? Hebrews 13:8 says, Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. He doesn't change. Jesus didn't make a mistake and He doesn't change His mind. He made the Sabbath. He did not do away with it. So God's mark is the Holy Sabbath, His commandments in your mind, in your heart, and in action in your lives, in your mind and on your hand. It's what separates His people. It's what sets you apart. Now turn with me back to Revelation chapter 14. I want to go back and read this again. Key in on this mark of the beast. Let's talk a little bit more about this. This mark of the beast. Revelation chapter 14, verse 8. We'll start in verse 9. And the third angel followed him, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark. Now we just read that God's mark is the commandments of God and the Sabbaths. This beast has a mark too. I would think it's going to be similar. The commandments and the traditions and the customs of the beast, the Sabbaths of this beast, in your mind and in your hands. Same thing. What commandments does the world have in their mind? What commandments do they do with their hand? I think in terms of this beast, well, I'll get to that in a second. This powerful, unyielding, ferocious beast. This mark of the beast. Going back to this timeline. So continuing on with this, after Rome was established, around 30 AD, Christ was crucified. And about 250 years later, so for 250 years, Christians, the apostles, Christ Himself continued to keep the Sabbath, the holy days. Even around 275, there was still a vast majority of Christians still keeping all of these days, but there was a small pocket of Christians that was growing that started keeping different days. 274 AD, Aurelian, who was a Roman emperor, made Mithraism, going back to this Babylonian god, the sun god Mithra, god of the sun, who has a birthday of December 25th, because the sun sets, the shortest day of the year is the 22nd, so the sun, S-U-N, dies on December 22nd, and 3 days later is resurrected, according to this Babylonian religion, Mithra. That's the birthday of the sun. So Aurelian makes Mithraism the official religion of Rome. About 30 years later, Constantine, who was another Roman emperor, ended Christian persecution. And about 321, he started to realize that he wanted to unite his kingdom under a common religion. And he thought Christianity would be the right vehicle to do that. And he decreed, so basically he made it mandatory that everybody would become Christian. So it wasn't, you know, like God doesn't make it mandatory that He doesn't force you to become. He gives you a choice. Well, Constantine forced everybody to become Christian. And there was a bunch of Mithraists and pagans, and they had their customs and traditions, and they obviously immediately embraced Christianity and stopped doing everything pagan and followed all of God's ways, right? Well, theirs was pretty fun. They had parties. They had the mistletoe, and they kissed under the mistletoe. Those were pretty good days. After all, it's when all our family gets together on December 25th. where we worship the birthday of Mithra. So Constantine and the folks in charge of the Roman Emperor there, Empire, he had a problem. They wanted everybody to be Christian, but people weren't going to just embrace Christianity. So 321 AD, Constantine said, quote, "On the venerable day of the sun, S-U-N, let the magistrates and people residing in cities rest," because they were already worshiping on the first day of the week, which was in honor of Mithra, the sun god. So Constantine says, okay, well, on that first day of the week, the day of the sun, let everybody and the people residing in the cities rest, and let all workshops be closed. In the country, however, persons engaged in agriculture may freely and lawfully continue their pursuits, because it often happens that on another day is not so suitable for grain sowing or vine planting. So he was even more friendly than God. If you had to do work on this first day, you could, because it might have been raining on the, or you know, on a different day. It says, because it lest be neglected and the proper moment for such operation of the bounty of heaven should be lost. So here, Constantine said officially in Rome that people were to keep the first day of the week as their rest. In 325 of the Council of Nicaea, quote, Constantine said this, "We also send you the good news," so this was a command throughout the Roman Empire, "we also send you the good news of the settlement concerning the holy Pasch," or the Passover, because that was a problem. People were keeping Easter to Ishtar, the goddess of fertility. So he said, this is concerning the Passover. "Namely, that in answer to your prayers, this question also has been resolved. All the brethren in the East who have hitherto followed the Jewish practice of the Passover will henceforth observe the custom of the Romans and of yourselves and of all of us who from ancient times have kept Easter together with you." This is referenced in the Seven Ecumenical Councils, page 114. This is a direct quote from Constantine. So you see in history that here is a man who is part of this beast, the Roman Empire, that fourth beast with seven heads, who is going to change times and laws, changed times and laws, just like the Bible said. He changed the Sabbath to Sunday. He changed Passover to Easter. 380 AD, Theodosius officially adopted Christianity, or this form of Christianity, as a state religion. And non-believers were considered practicing illegal heresy and subject to death, just like the Bible predicted. There's going to be a persecution of the saints. And there was. If you read Fox's Book of Martyrs, you'll see how many of the saints who refused to take on, keep these days, were put to death. You look at modern Christianity, this false religion associated with the Roman Empire. Well, let me just ask, what religion is associated with the Roman Empire? The Holy Roman Catholic Church. With Sunday worship, Christmas, Easter, Halloween. Jesus predicted this. Look over here, Matthew chapter 24. Just so you don't say, wow, that's incredible. All these people are deceived. Look what Jesus says in Matthew 24, verse 4. "And Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. For many, many, not few, many shall come in my name saying, I am Christ." There are going to be many people that are claiming to be Christian, but they're going to deceive many people because they're not Christian. Verse 11, "And many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many." That's why everybody does that, and there's only a few people doing this. Christ said many would be deceived because there's going to be many false Christian teachings and doctrines coming out of this Babylonian mystery religion associated with this beast. Turn with me over to 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 13. Because these churches, I'm not saying that they don't do good things. They do great charities. They have some of the truth. But a deception isn't a full-out opposite. A deception is it's just a little bit. It's a little off. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 13, the Apostle Paul warns us about these false Christs. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. So here are these false teachers that make themselves into Christian teachers. They claim that they're of Christ. He says, and no marvel. Don't be surprised at this, because Satan himself, who's actually pretty smart, Satan's not going to try to... Imagine if Satan's only card that he had in his pocket was if he looked like a big dragon and looked scary. How many... There would be some people that would follow him, because they do. Right? But how many people would follow Satan if he was scary and mean and not attractive? Not many. But look what Satan does. For Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Looks good. Enticing. Wow. I want to be part of that, because that looks like they're really having a great time. Oh, it's family oriented. It's all about the children. It's appealing. Smells nice. Nice glittery lights. Satan transforms himself into an angel of light so that he can deceive many. Christ told us this. He says, don't be surprised by this. Satan's a pretty smart guy. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers, the demons, and those who are claiming to be Christ but are false Christs, no great thing if his ministers, these false Christian teachers, also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness. They're going to look good. They're going to do a lot of good things. They're going to say a lot of good things. But God says, whose end shall be according to their works. Revelation chapter 17, verse 1. Going back to this beast, this system that is the foundation of the worldly culture out there. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come here, come hither. I will show unto you the judgment of this great whore that sits upon many waters. God doesn't mince words. He talks about this false Christian religion as a whore. Sitting upon many waters means that it's over many different people. With whom the kings of the earth, the Roman kings, presidents, national leaders, have allied with, whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and inhabitants of the earth who have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. I think in terms of this whole Christmas season, people are drunk with it. I can't believe that it's hijacked Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is no longer Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is the first day of Christmas shopping. Right? The Christmas commercials are starting well before Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving, 8 o'clock at night, we got to get to the stores because we got to go Christmas shopping. This is a day where we're going to give thanks as a nation to God. And we're already celebrating this pagan holiday. It is a beast. Powerful. Just devours everything in its path. God talks about it as a whore. And the woman who was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication, and upon her forehead was a name written. I think of all this golden cup and the pearls and everything else, and I look at some of these churches in Europe. I've been able to travel around Europe. If you haven't and you ever get a chance, it would be worth going and visiting some of these churches. And you think about how many people died building these great, great structures. You look at St. Peter's Basilica, it's huge, and everything's plated with gold. It's ornate. You think of the wealth and the power behind that. And then you think of God's church, humble. We can't even afford our own building. I mean, really, every dollar we have comes back to the church or goes to the ministry. I don't see things laced with gold here. I'm not wearing it. Well, okay, my wedding ring. This church God refers to had a name on her forehead. The name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. God is not happy with this false religion. God doesn't like it. When I read this, I picture God being sick over it. Talking about blasphemies. The word blasphemy means disrespect and not giving God his due. We're not going to do your commandments, God. We're not going to keep your days. We're going to keep ours because they're more fun. You understand why God is upset. He says, talks about it with his indignation and his wrath. I don't have time to go through this, brethren, but I'd like you to take a couple notes here. Read about 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 25, King Jeroboam. Because here King Jeroboam was a king in ancient Israel who decided to just change the worship a little bit. He didn't even change the day. On the Feast of Tabernacles, Jeroboam said, I'm going to create two calves. And these are your gods, Israel. We're still going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles on the same day, but we're going to do a little bit differently. Because he didn't want people going down to Jerusalem with King Rehoboam. He was jealous. So he changed it up, and you can see what happened to King Jeroboam and the kingdom. God was very mad. You can read in 1 Kings chapter 28, verse 15. I'll just reference a couple things here. For anyone who does not want to keep God's commandments and his statutes and his Sabbaths, those who don't have God's mark on their foreheads and on their hands. He says, cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the field. Shall be your basket and your store. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body. The fruit of your land is going to be cursed. I think in terms of the fact that we have not practiced God's agricultural laws. And our vegetables, our broccoli doesn't even have any nutrients in it anymore. Our broccoli's cursed. If you think about it, you can read the whole chapter 28 is this laundry list of cursings. God wants us to get it through our heads. That if you have the mark of the beast and not his mark, it's not going to work out well for you. You wonder why our country is going off the deep end? Because we've rejected God. You can read in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 1 through 11, the great blessings God promises to those who have his mark. And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of your Lord your God, observe and to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Lord your God will set you on high above all nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come on you. Blessed you shall be in the city. Blessed you shall be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the fruit of the ground, the fruit of your cattle. Blessed shall be the basket in your store. Shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. And you can continue reading. Many, many blessings by keeping God's ways and having the mark of God on your forehead. Brethren, the mark of the beast is this adherence to the traditions, the man-made traditions in the culture of this Roman system connected with this Babylonian mystery religion, disguising itself as Christianity. with its birthday on 25 December, which is Mithra's birthday. When I realized this, it was like, wow! They didn't even change the name of Easter. Easter is still named after the pagan god Easter. What is the mark of the beast? It's if you have those traditions in your mind and in your heart. And if you have those traditions in your hand when you set out to do those and participate in those. Now you can't get out, you can't teleport yourself out of this world. It's all around us. Don't be afraid of it. But you can be in the midst of all of this and still have God's laws in your mind and your heart, and God's commandments in your actions, in the Sabbath, in giving and praying for others, in everything it means to keep God's commandments, to love Him first and to love others as yourselves. Not to blaspheme His name, but to praise His name, to honor Him with your actions. Honor God with how you live your life. Put God's commandments as your mark. I said every one of you is a marked man or woman. What mark are you marked with? God's or this Babylonian mystery religion? Revelation 15. Let's finish here. Revelation chapter 15, verse 1. And I saw another sign in heaven. I'll give you a second to get there. Revelation chapter 15, verse 1. And I saw another sign in heaven. This is what John saw. Great and marvelous. Seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them is filled up with the wrath of God. And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire. And them that had gotten the victory over the beast and over his image and over his mark and over the number of his name stand in the sea of glass having the harps of God. These are people that had victory over that. See, it's a choice. And God says that He is with us wherever we go, that His Spirit is a spirit of power, power to overcome. A beast can be pretty scary. But David, with God's help, was able to kill a couple beasts, a bear and a lion, and Goliath. God can help you overcome this beast. And He will. He promises to. It says, they shall sing a song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvelous are your works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are your ways, thou King of saints. Who shall not fear you, O Lord, the glory of your name? For you only are holy. For all nations shall come and worship before you. For your judgments are made manifest. Brethren, please, remember, as we go through this season, don't be afraid of it, but have confidence to know where you stand, which mark you bear, and that God is going to give you the strength as long as you continue to stay close to Him, connected with Him, and to keep His commands in your mind and in your heart and in your hand to do them.